Hello and welcome. Today I am joined by Ben Digweed, who is multi-sport physio at UKSI, as well as being a lecturer at Manchester Metropolitan University. So Ben, how are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. Very good, yeah. Thanks very much for inviting me on. I've listened to quite a few of these, Andy. So there's some impressive people on there. So I'll see if I get anywhere near them. But it's a massive hats off to you for getting this all going. Actually, it's been for me. It's really interesting to see people in my area, like what their backgrounds and stuff is coming into it. So yeah, really pleased to like actually get on the show as well. And yeah, thanks very much.
Brilliant. Oh no, thank you for that. No, it is. I really enjoy doing them. I'm interested in people and how they got to where they are, and hopefully it does help people. The feedback has been that people like you are really established in the industry, but then for the people thinking of getting into it or trying to understand it. So yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. And also thank you for coming on again. So we tried this one about 2 weeks ago, and we had a minor or major, probably a bit of both really, technical malfunction. So thank you for coming back again.
It's no problem at all. Hopefully it records this time, or we've got the
Yeah,
recording options.
I've got a red light, so that's progress from where we
That's
were
brilliant.
last time. So we were just saying before, I think I was actually in that room on Friday. So you're a MIP at the moment.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so it's a multi-sport day for me today. So physio-wise, I'm here seeing anyone and everyone who's eligible to come and see us. That generally on world-class funding. On a Monday and Tuesday, I'm here at the moment. Yeah, we get a right mixture of different people that are coming in. I know you've had a couple of other guys, Jim and IK, on the program as well. So it's a very, I work really closely with them, the two sports docs. And the idea is to just kind of sort of knit together kind of sort of sports medicine provision in the Northwest, really. So regionally, I'm based here. And then later in the week, Wednesday to Friday, I go over to MMU, and that's at the Brooks Building in the centre of Manchester. That role there is a lecturing role that also has me working in the clinic there as well. So very varied workload.
Very good. Two really impressive facilities you're working out of as well, and with two great sets of team as well.
Yeah, I'm really lucky actually. Like we've got UKSI wise, I work with some great practitioners. I've got some great technical leads. The network is fantastic because I can link with some of the best in the business. And if you've got problems, and often there are quite a few, especially this time in the cycle, there are obviously everyone's getting pretty nervous in the run up to those two big events going on in the summer. Then it's really good to have people at the other end of the phone and be able to like get their opinion and those types of things. And then at MMU again, like I've got a great set of practitioners around there in the clinic. Chris McCarthy works there. Will is our sort of newly grad really that's with us, but he's absolutely fantastic. He's done a great job there. And then we've got Tom, who's new to the clinic, has come out from Man United. So there's a really good clinic base there. And then lecturing wise, we've got some fantastic lecturers that are there as well. So there's some good research going on. It's a good department. We've got great students that are there, really dynamic sort of student base being in Manchester. Quite different to being at some of the other universities I've been based at. So I'm really lucky in Manchester. As you know, Manchester's a pretty, it's got a lot of things going on for it, especially sports wise.
Well, I remember when you first were coming up, we obviously met when we had the clinic, and we got together and we were looking at, is there some sort of role for us? And like where we were at probably wasn't quite what you were looking for, and it just wasn't quite the synergy there.
We'll get onto that in a bit. I arrived in Manchester. Let's just call me a prisoner of love. I've got to just followed my now wife up here, and thought the bright lights of Manchester and the dull grey skies would lead to some work in sport. And I've been really lucky actually. Like I've kind of sort of landed in two really, really good positions.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, no, we'll come back to that. And then also, you've recently been away on the Winter Olympics as well. How was that?
The Winter Youth Olympics. Yeah, really good. Amazing, actually. It was an amazing experience. I was out there in January. I will come back to it in a bit, but it as an experience out in South Korea, it was fantastic. We had a great team out there. We had a really, really interesting like group of like athletes that were out there as well, doing lots of different sports. Weirdly, it's a bit full circle because I've done a couple of ski seasons, so I've kind of come back to the kind of winter sports, and it was great to be in that environment again. And South Korea is a fantastic country. It's really amazing. People are absolutely lovely. So yeah, we'll come back to that. But yeah, what an experience that was. I was really lucky.
Yeah, brilliant. So yeah, so going back to where it all began for you then. So where are you from originally?
So I'm from deepest, darkest Sussex, which is so East Sussex near Brighton, really. Brighton is my football team, just if we want to clarify that. So obviously doing well now, but when I was a kid, they weren't doing well at all. So quite different. But in East Sussex, I'm from a little town called Horam, which no one would have really heard of. It's very country bumpkin. I didn't really feel like I'd ever be in the sort of space the way I am now. But it was a lovely area. Like mum and dad, mum was a nurse, dad was a plumber. And so by trade, and he worked really all hours, God sends really. And it's actually really interesting. Yeah, I've got kids now, and also listening to these podcasts, because you do realize these places kind of sort of make you as you kind of grow up, really. And I guess seeing my mum in that kind of sort of health care sort of environment was obviously quite inspiring. She's she stayed working full time. That's actually, now I can see how hard that would have been. My dad was working pretty much all the time, so he was out kind of sort of doing jobs and stuff locally, like real hard worker. He's still working now. And we grew up in a lovely place. It was a very safe place. I was like madly into sport, loved football, loved basketball. Would just I look back at it now, you think how lucky you are. I just did sport all the time, and that's what I really enjoyed, and that's kind of all I really did. And school was great. Like, I was at a nice primary school, secondary school was nice. Like, didn't really have any major issues. Was not a amazing student, but was not a poor student. And obviously, if you can play a bit of sport, you can kind of get around, so it's pretty useful. And then, yeah, then I guess I was kind of starting to think like what I was going to kind of do from school and where I was going to go. And to be honest, I didn't really kind of sort of know. I was probably getting towards the end of that time period. I didn't do massively well in my GCSEs, kept things really open at A levels. And then I didn't quite know where to sort of take everything next, really.
It's interesting that it's like your upbringing sounds actually very similar to mine, where all was kind of textbook, great, lovely, really solid and everything. Because you do look at things now and it does feel a bit different. I don't know if it's because, well, I was in a suburb in Southport, which was very, well, it's quite cut off from the city. Liverpool was the nearest city. But we'd be playing sport all the time, we'd be out doing stuff all the time. And it was now, it just doesn't feel like that. So I don't know whether that's because that's and more of a city thing, or is it just a time period thing?
It's probably both, isn't it? It is interesting. Brighton was the newest city to us. Brighton's a really liberal city. I love Brighton. It's an amazing place. Like, the people are lovely. Like, it really probably did shape a little bit like my kind of sort of what I think I'm like. People are really open there. Mainly people go on stag do's there, but like, it's a really open sea. Anything kind of goes. And being just outside of that, being in the suburb, I guess like we always kind of wanted to go there. That was always a place that something was going on, but we were very protected where we were, really. And because we didn't have the internet, so we didn't really, I mean, we did have the internet, but we didn't have it on our phones. So you weren't looking at like all that type of stuff. You weren't bombarded by what's really going on in the world, sort of social media wise. So I guess it was just really safe. And it was probably, but the thing was, it was quite boring. So that was the other thing, is like, you're like, oh well, there's not really too much going on here. So you played sport. And so I think on reflection, I was thinking this before I came on today, was like, why did I end up here? Like, I kind of think part of it was I wanted to get out there and see the world a bit, and that's kind of sort of what led me to do some traveling and stuff. But it was super safe, a lovely place to for kids to grow up. But I guess I'd kind of outgrown it a little bit and wanted to see the kind of rest of the world, which I think is where the drive to get out there and go and see stuff and go and do some of the stuff that I've done so far has been.
Yeah. So what was that thing then? So you were doing GCSEs, A levels, then what was that university piece? Because that is always a big one, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. And so I didn't know what I was going to do, really. And I wasn't academic enough to do physio. It wasn't even really on my radar then. I kept stuff really open, like at A level. I stayed at a local college. And then a friend of mine, we're basically in school, we went on a ski trip, and I managed to cobble the money off my parents, obviously, to go on this ski trip. And we all went out there. And the one of the people I was traveling with, we were on this trip with, Rhea, her older brother had gone out and done a ski season in Whistler. And I kind of completed the ski trip and I was like, oh God, I love this. Like, you know, I need to go and do this again. And I kind of, it was in the background. And then we were in A-levels and she was like, oh, I'm going to take a break before uni. I'm going to do the classic like gap year. And so I thought, do you know what? I really fancy doing that. I don't really know what I'm going to do. I got a place at a university, like fruit clearing, I think it was. It was like, I was going to do PE teaching down at Greenwich. And that was kind of my plan the other side of it. But it just meant I could get my working visa. And that meant I could go and work out for basically the mountain resort in Canada for a year. So I did that. I went and me and Rhea went out there and we just worked for the mountain. And that was brilliant because I was pretty shy. You know, I chat to people, I had a good collection of friends, but I was ready to see some different things. And that trip just it made it for me, like for as an individual. I was completely different when I came back. I'd grown up, I'd learned, you know, like going to uni, I'd been like living on my own, I'd managed to like break my bones. I'll come back to that. But it was a real like just opening experience where I just went to go and do something really enjoyable, and there was no real pressure of study. And actually the pressure came off in terms of like, what was I going to do? I kind of figured it out. And then lo and behold, my dad's just about to come out a couple of weeks to come and see us in like April time. And then he gets the phone call. Hello. Now, just first thing is, your son's okay, but have you got your credit card? And I'd essentially tried to do a double flip, but can't actually do a double flip, and landed off a jump, broke my rib, smashed my wrist, and was in hospital down in Vancouver. So that was a kind of a bit of, oh right, okay. So and really, actually, to be honest, that actually led me to physio in the end, because I ended up having some like insurance that like covered me, got some physio while I was out there after I'd had it all pinned and stuff, and then obviously realized pretty quick I was going to have to come home. So when I came home, I was like, you know what, this physio thing, I could travel with this. This could be an option. So that kind of got me thinking, right, what can I do? But I didn't have the grades to do physio. Like, I was well off already. So I decided to swap my course and did sports science in Liverpool. And I came and did that at Liverpool John Moores. So near your neck of the woods for 3 years between sort of 2001 to 2005.
Right, yeah, no, JMU's got a really good sports science program, very, very highly regarded. It's, yeah, again, it's not that it's about me at all, this one, but I can see a lot of synergies of like maturity, not knowing really what you want to do. Sports science is quite a good option for that. It's like, yeah, it's such a massive area.
Yeah.
You're going to be a PE teacher or work in a gym was like that. That was the general pathway to that, or become, you know, successful physio like you have. But it's sports science is it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because it sounds quite grand, but it's so broad.
Yeah, I loved it. I have to admit, it really suited me, because at that stage I didn't quite exactly know, but I did know that it kept my route ways open. And at that stage, there wasn't quite as many physio courses as there are now. So there's a lot of physio courses out there. But this new pre-reg route was there. So if I did a sports science, I didn't have to do a physio like 3 year course again. I had the option to do this like fast track 2 years, so that was a big sell, to be fair. And to be honest though, Liverpool was such a great city. Like, Liverpool is a great city. Again, it's actually a very liberal city. It's great people, great banter. Like, you know, the taxi drivers they're all comedians. And like, student wise we had a great time there, and I loved the course. It wasn't anywhere near as intense as I think the physio students have it, if that makes sense. So we had a lot of freedom. I do remember my dad saying, like, you know, you better come out with something from this place, mate, in not so polite words. But that really stuck with me. It was like, okay, well, have a good time, but make sure you come out like with your degree. And I had a great time there. And actually, weirdly, a lot of people in the Northwest have come through Liverpool John Moores, and actually quite a few now work at like MMU now. Like, some of the lecturers that were there originally, some of those that were doing their PhDs are now doing their postdoc stuff around the area, or their professors around this area. So it was much more of a hub for sports science than what I realized it was at the time. Like, it's only since looking back going, blimey, there's a lot of really good people that have come through that kind of course.
Well, I think there was a lot. I think a lot of the JMU people went to Salford as well, like Phil Graham Smith, and you know, a lot of the guys that then went over to work in Aspetar and so on. So I think there was quite a hotbed in the northwest of these big universities: Salford, MMU, JMU. So yeah, it is quite interesting that they've that's really transpired. But when you were there then, so did you have a particular area of interest within sports science?
I just went down the biomechanics route, really. So we had a really good biomechanics lab there, and there was a lecturer there called Gabor, and he may still be there, and he just really sold it to me, really, in terms of when he was doing his lectures. And I love the physiology stuff. The psychology stuff I wasn't so into at that time point, but now I see how important it is, and the area's just grown massively. But the biomechanics stuff, like I did my like third year project, and that I got to use all the kind of sort of like tech, the system, like the Qolysis system as it was then. And my kind of sort of third year project was like looking at ankle taping. So by then I'd kind of knew that I think I'm going to do this like physio route. So I'll pick something that will tick a box for interview. And that's probably been a bit of a theme. I am usually looking a couple of steps ahead, like what is it I'm kind of thinking about doing next, and where could I like build my portfolio or like fill in some gaps? So I know a lot of people I've listened to on the podcast, oh, I just fell into that. And there is a certain amount of that, but I have to admit, I am relatively strategic about going, okay, well, what do I kind of need to do in order to kind of sort of get to this next little bit? So I'm very goal orientated like that. So that kind of really, really sort of sold it to me, really. And actually, to be fair, like I use a lot of that kind of sort of information now. It really set me up really well for like going in and doing the fast track physio course, which was much more about healthcare. That is much more about the broad areas, not just about like MSK.
Yeah, no, well, it is interesting now with biomechanics, with, you know, force plates becoming way more accessible, and, you know, Qolysis, it was Naraxon, all of those things then. Whereas now it's very practical, isn't it, with some of the kit that you have. So it's probably stood you in good stead, I'm sure, for those things. So, and then at what point did you start to, like, you were thinking a couple of moves ahead? Like, what was the process for starting the physio?
I was thinking, I've worked for 3 years. I need to take another break here. I probably need to go and do another ski season. So, but I did know
Work
that
worked.
I'd...
You'd worked for 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, worked in Liverpool and like just got a degree and enjoyed the lifestyle a lot. I was like, right, do you know what? I think I'm going to do this physio thing. But I knew in my head, as soon as I did that, it was kind of like, right, you're in now. You're kind of like, you need to kind of sort of get your kind of job, and you're probably like sort of sticking with that. So this is your kind of last chance, really, to like do something for a year. So I did. I went again. I did another ski season. I managed to get like a visa, and I had about 18 months where basically I managed to interview and get a. You couldn't do it then, but you can't do it now so much. But I managed to defer entry to like a fast track course in Southampton. So I had it on the. I knew I was going to be doing that in 18 months. I saved up a load of money, did a ski season, came back, saved up another load of money, went out to Australia for like 3 months when I could use that visa for the last time, did a bit more work out there, saw the world, saw some mates, saw people I've met on the ski season previously, and then moved down to Southampton and started the fast track master's course.
How helpful was it that you've had these 2 gap years out for maturity? You've obviously done a degree as well. Well, how different did you feel as a person going into that?
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, I've been really lucky to do it. I've been really lucky because my parents really supported me doing it. Because, I mean, a lot of the time, you're living under their roof, and they'd be like, no, you need to just get on with what you're doing. But I think because I always had a bit of a plan about what I was going to do, they were really open to me. Basically, like, when I was coming back from these things, and I was allowed to stop gap and stay there, and I might be like working full time, like at a local leisure centre, wherever, to make money and stuff. But in the background, I was always doing something towards the physio stuff. So I was like doing my PT training, or I was doing some massage training, or like something that was going to add to the next kind of thing I was doing. But those two time blocks for me as an individual were huge, because the first one, going away from home, learning how to like look after yourself, you're phoning home every Sunday, like saving your money to like do that. Mum can have a bit more money. You've only got a certain amount of money to like live for like a week, all that sort of type of stuff. That's huge in terms of life experience. Like that's always a big thing, especially when I see the students now. Like that's the hardest thing in the first year. And then the second time round, I knew in the background, I had a great time. I had some great people out there, you know, friends for life. Aaron, who I'd stayed with most of the time I was out the ski season, to come back and just go, right, do you know what? I'm mid-20s now. I kind of need to knuckle down a little bit now, but I feel like I've kind of got that out of my system. And it didn't feel like I was going to like get into work for like a couple of years and then want to kind of do it then. And I just felt I probably wasn't going to have that opportunity again to do that.
Yeah. And that's from the academic standpoint, you said you were kind of, you were okay.
Yeah.
Do you see that as being academic, or is that just knowing how to apply your knowledge in a way to get through?
I'd definitely say that's the latter. My wife, Anna, she's an A&E doctor. And to be quite honest, we're chalk and cheese when it comes to our learning. Like, she is unbelievable at being able to like learn things, take on information, remember it. And, you know, you're never going to get away with anything because she will remember what I've said. You know, it's the photographic memory. But she has to work really hard. But it's interesting, her learning style compared to mine. And I would have never got anywhere near medicine for that reason. Like, I can't learn information like that. And I'd always sort of struggled with that. It was all about, did I enjoy it really? So it was a motivation thing, but I always struggled remembering things for exams. I hated exams. I've always hated practical written exams, like it was for us then. And I don't know whether or not it's still the case now, but coursework I kind of got away with. But to be honest, where I fell through the net was the fact I didn't realize I was dyslexic. So I didn't really actually realize until, it wasn't until I went and did the pre-reg course, I somehow, and I remember my mate on my dissertation, Will, for my undergrad sports science, he did a proofread of it and he was like, mate, this is terrible. Like, it's like the spelling's all over the place. Like, I don't really know what you're trying to say. And he like really helped me with it. Like, and it's just like marking all over it. Like, here you go. There's a kind of like, I can't spend any longer than that. And I was like, oh, all right, fine. I'm just not very good at it. But it wasn't until I did the first placement of like, would have been the end of the first year of the 2-year pre-reg physio course, that a supervisor turned around to me and just went, I think you're dyslexic. And I was just literally like, whoa, okay. Well, didn't really see that coming. I knew I was struggling on the placement anyway. And I knew I was really struggling with like the note writing in particular. But then I had a very, very supportive like tutor on, and I think this was quite a big like bit of why I kind of ended up in the lecturing space, was because Louise was her name, and she was fantastic because she was a mature student. I was working on a respiratory ward and I sort of said, look, on my last placement, this was kind of flagged. I didn't know anything about it. I've kind of slipped through the net. I'm like 26, 27. Like, we'd never really kind of sort of, that thing came up at school. And then, so I'm kind of going for this sort of test. I'll come back and I'll get the info for it. And she was so supportive. Like, she was like, yeah, no, I'm dyslexic. She really reached out. And I think for a student that was like really struggling, and honestly, after the first placement, which is in MSK, I thought, I don't think this is for me. I don't think I've got the academic level really to go this far. And it wasn't until this person helped me out and I was like, all right, well, it's actually just more about how I take in information, how I'm kind of wired, like what works for me. And there's obviously a huge spectrum. I really understand that now. I think that's probably the thing where I went, oh, well, do you know what? Knowing that, I could probably really help some people out in the future. So it was at that point really that I realized, you know what? I'm not necessarily not academic, but there are places where I'll struggle and I'll have to like work for things. And to be honest, until I got to that academic level, it didn't really show up. It just, I had strategies for it and got away with it. And then actually I couldn't get away with it anymore then.
Yeah, I do think it's really interesting. So many of these chats have had a similar thing to you, where it's actually the way that you deliver information, like all learning, like you're in higher education now, is like, it has been geared to, you do an exam, it's like, this is it, you got to pass. You say it, I'm not very academic. I'm sure you are. It's maybe just more like a practical way or how you deliver it. And because it definitely resonates with me, whereas I didn't enjoy doing exams particularly, but I would always say I'm a hard worker, but only on things that I enjoy. There's different ways in which you want to spend time learning, because a lot of it is just memorizing information, isn't it? And if you're good at doing that, you're clever, or keep doing this, I'm going to stop doing that.
It is really interesting. And now being on the other side of it and you're involved in the assessment bit, how you gear up an assessment to show competence in my area, it's interesting because actually now you may be like stopping somebody demonstrating competence just because of the assessment method. And that's the quite interesting bit. The assessment method when I was at A-levels was, it's a written down paper. But now the assessment method was practicals. Well, I can do practicals. That's no problem at all. The coursework, well, that's now a bit more challenging because that's got to be a written format. That's got to have a certain way in which you deliver that information. Well, now that's a bit more difficult. But it's all about the way you're tested. But like you say, if you're motivated to learn and you want to learn, you want to like get to that space, then you just got to work out the ways around what the assessment criteria is. And that's what I think I've learned from it, is more how you're assessed about, you know, that knowledge.
Yeah, no, it is interesting. So then for what point when you were in doing your physio course, do you have a vision in terms of what you did want to go into?
Well, I have to admit, I did always love sport and wanted to sort of be in the sport bit. And I did think, to be honest, like my physio thing initially was going to be my vehicle to go abroad and go work abroad. And that hasn't really kind of sort of like panned out as such, really, for lots of reasons. But I went to, I was a member of the student CSP and we had this like conference each year. And what the conference, one of the British Olympic physios, Dr. Nicola Phillips, who's down at like, I think she's down at Cardiff. She did a talk and I remember her doing this talk at this conference and she literally said, look, basically, this is incredibly hard to get into. You'll the chances of you getting into this area are very, very slim. Here's how I got into it. And I just remember listening to this talk and being like, that is exactly what I want to do. Like that is what I want. You know, like an athlete would have gone, oh, I want to like go and be a gold medalist at wherever. I was like, you know what, I want to work in and around Olympic athletes at some point in my career. And I was like, well, I probably won't be able to do that. But what I'll do is I'll kind of keep that on the back burner and I'll aim for it. But I won't kind of sort of, you know, sort of say it too much, really, because to be honest, when you go in and like is doing your pre-reg stuff, you get in all the different areas of physio, which is really, really, really useful. And I always loved the MSK stuff. But like I said, I had a real kind of like wake up moment. I was like, I'm not sure I'm like really very good at this. But then as I got towards the end of the master's, the pre-reg, I was playing football and I was playing football with a guy for a team that was Solent University. So although I was at Southampton, I was playing football for them. And this football manager was playing with Grantie. He was like, look, we're kind of thinking about setting up a bit of a clinic about the time when you kind of qualify. Do you fancy doing it for our kind of sports scholarship people? And I was like, yeah, definitely. So that was starting to like be on the horizon. And I had a few friends that were kind of thinking about staying in Portsmouth. And my girlfriend at the time was staying around Portsmouth as well. So it was starting to fall into place. So I was like, do you know what? I think I will be able to start to pick up some sports work. And I knew in my head, if I kept it really open with sports work and I saw a lot of different things, then my chances of like going and doing some multi-sport stuff would be a lot higher. So it's just like, basically see everything you can, get yourself on these scholarship, get to a university because there's lots of sports going on there and you'll see lots of things. So that's kind of what I was starting to think.
Yeah, and was that a full-time paid role that you were doing then?
No, it was kind of, so I applied and got my junior rotations in Portsmouth and I was super, super lucky. I had a great management team there and a great group of friends there in Portsmouth. So full time, I was a junior physio and there's a load of people I'd sort of qualified with. And I probably met some of the best people that I've stayed in contact with as like a social group from Portsmouth. And looking back on that now, that sort of 3 years that I was in Portsmouth after I qualified was, you know, you're earning money, so you weren't scraping by now. Like you had a really good social group there. Portsmouth was a really great place to learn. The MSK practitioners at all the different hospitals that we rotated around were great. Did some brilliant rotations like ITU, rheumatology, hydro, stroke, neuro, community, MSK. And we had some really, really good like MSK people there who had done these kind of MACP courses, which is like a bit of a clinical specialist interest group that I'll come back to because that will kind of come back to some more learning I did. But I sort of saw these practitioners working at that level. I was like, all right, these guys are good. This is kind of what I want to be like. And so I did that for 3 years. And outside of that, like full-time work, I just started working for Solent one evening a week. So started seeing their scholarship students. I worked for Portsmouth Football Club. So started doing pitch side stuff and seeing their kind of sort of the youngsters, helping a bit out with the clinic. And then I was really lucky and I got for a friend who was like, oh, they're looking for some more physios at Chelsea Football Academy. And I was like, hello, it might be an hour down the road, but I'm more than willing to drive up to Cobham from Portsmouth. And if there's anything going, and then I started to do that, which again, like really like opened up my world to elite sport really big time.
Brilliant. Yeah. So what was that Chelsea experience like then?
It was absolutely unbelievable. Like it was at the time, I don't think I quite realised like the level of the practitioners and the coaching staff that were there, or the level that the club was operating on. I mean, it obviously it's going through a massive transition now, but then was peak Abramovich time. So, you know, there would be an Apache helicopter, you know, like arriving, and you can't go down the pitch because there's somebody's coming along, because you can't know who it is, but they're doing a medical sign-in. But you look on BBC Sport and like, you know, somebody's saying that they're going to sign, and you're thinking, oh well, this is sort of thing. So it was pretty unbelievable because there was a lot of media stuff around Chelsea, you know, so to wear the kit was, you know, it was an absolute honor really. And but the practitioners that work in there, like Kate, Simon, they were at the academy, it really worked well. They had a really good structure for full-time staff and then the staff like me that were just coming in and helping out. And the way the clinics were run, the way the kind of club was run towards at that time, it was the medical team was really, really well set up, and there was a good like link between the two. So we were getting great information from those full-time like academy staff, and we had a great crop of players that were coming through. Like the under 12s were basically the group that went to the under 17 World Cup for England and won it. And so that had some, I didn't realize at the time, like what good young players were there. So that kind of pushed the level up. And obviously the club was, it had a lot of money. So it had a lot of kit, and it had a lot of provision, and it had psychologists, it had nutritionists, it had, so you really did see like what an elite level sport like setup was like. And obviously they were one of the better ones in London at that time, so they were getting the best talent, and that was really, and it's been proved really. I mean, like they won so many of those youth cups over the kind of sort of 2010 to like the end of like 2020, and they've had some of the best players that have kind of come through there. But it was amazing to be part of that, and I got so much out of that. It was brilliant.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. Yeah, that Chelsea period, that really was, well, it was the golden era. I mean, I loved that period just in the Premier League anyway, but that particularly that Chelsea team had that real, well, it was one of the best teams, Mourinho, all of those things, a real mystique around it with, you know, Terry, Lampard, and, you know, some of the talent that they had there.
Yeah, it was amazing. And the kind of bit that then, so I'd got to the end of like the 3 years of my junior rotations, and I'd started to apply for these band sixes, and I was like, I do want to stay in the NHS, but I got this itch where I do want to sort of step into sport. But I knew that I kind of needed a bit more. I needed a bit more understanding in, like, of that area. So this like sort of thing at Solent was kind of snowballing. Like I'd gone from like doing one day to like a couple of evenings a week around the Chelsea stuff. So I was doing a lot of extra stuff, and I was doing weekend courses and all this type of stuff. So I was really like hammering it really. And then the Grantley was my kind of sort of boss there. He was like, well, do you know what? I think we're going to open up a full-time position here. Like, do you want to help us basically like put this position together? And Jason Palmer, who was at Chelsea, who I kind of knew through somebody like socially in Portsmouth, he came down and I'll never forget how helpful he was. He came down and he said, look, what are you thinking about doing? We'll go through this job description. We'll go around the kind of university. We'll meet all the staff, see what it's like, what you're setting up. And he came down this, I remember he came down this Chelsea kit. And I was thinking, oh God, like I've got this guy from Chelsea coming down. And he just went round and he went, yeah, this is good and the other. And he gave me this amazing advice. And I'm a bit indebted to him really, because that was a bit of a sliding doors moment. I was a bit like, well, I'm not really sure if this is going to come off. And he gave me a load of confidence to say, look, you've got your business proposal here. Like, this is kind of how it should work. Here's my experience. If you need any help, give me a shout. but like go for it. And I just thought, you know what, I think I'm going to. And so I kind of took what was then this full-time role that kind of came out, and I had to interview for it, but I knew what the role was going to be, and set up this basically the private clinic, like looking after the sports students. And I did that from 2012 to 2016. So that was really my kind of introduction into not full-time elite sport, but working with like talented athlete pathways. So working with the TAS systems and the Talented Athlete Support Scheme, and which I'm still involved in now. And that is a really great bed of learning. And we had a really good MDT there. We had a fantastic lifestyle advisor, Kelly. We had Dan as an S&C coach, Granny as our like performance lead. And we were a tiny little university, and we had a small amount of like students on scholarship, but we really did give them a really good amount of care. And that really gave me a good understanding of like, how do you work in a little team, like supporting one athlete? And we had the sports science department. So just like my sports science degree, we had lots of kit available. We had like we had all the biomechanics stuff. We had muscle physiology testing. We had an autogy down there. So at that time, not a lot of people had that sort of stuff. So we were able to get on this equipment and play around with it and try it and exercise test. And suddenly I was starting to use all my sports science stuff to like have a go and see about like, well, what markers can we use to help inform this person get back into sport? So suddenly I was using my sports science degree a bit more. I was like, wow, it's all kind of coming together. So, and they were Granny, the lead there, and the rest of the kind of sort of team at Solent, they were really, really supportive in like extra development. And I'd seen all these people doing postgrad further postgrad courses in like the MACP course, and I knew the one at Bryant was really good, and I spoke to quite a lot of people about the practitioners there and practitioners that I knew, and I was like, do you know what, I think this is the course that I want to do. I knew I needed more specialist skills and physios, but the key bit was about the fact that it did a master's placement again. So you have to go back on placement again as a master's student and like relive the fun of like just a mentor just grilling you about like, why are you doing this? Why are you doing the other? But I knew that would be a really good environment for me to be in. It would be tough, but I knew I'd get the most out of that rather than just like doing a bit of coursework or doing a practical exam. I didn't think that was going to be quite enough. So I started doing that part time over between that like time period.
Yeah. And then so how beneficial was that course?
It was amazing. Like it was I don't think I realized, I teach on that course now in Manchester, and I don't think I really realized the practitioners who ran that course, Claire and they just pushed you to a level where you were uncomfortable, but you were pushing the bounds of your knowledge. So I know James Moore's name's come up quite a bit on this, and I've only heard James Moore speak, so I've never met him, but it really did prepare me for being grilled. Like I'm not going to say I'm going to be able to go toe to toe with someone like that, and I've got some other great technical leads in the kind of network, but in order to sort of really pull apart, like, do you really know what you're talking about here? And is there evidence to support you? If there's not, that's fine, but be comfortable with the fact that it's going to be a little bit grey. And I think that's really, as a summary, that's what that course gave me. It gave me the confidence to understand an area, to be able to like, obviously like treat someone effectively, but gain lots of feedback one-to-one about how I approached a problem, what my thinking was like, how I'm getting to the bottom of a problem. And it's really about critical appraisal and critical analysis, really.
I think it is an interesting point that James, having seen him grill people myself, and it's as long as you're not on the end of it, then it's fine. But yeah, it's still quite difficult. It does seem to be within physio, and I'd be interested in your perspective, that there is this expectation on themselves or on you guys that you should know things. And like, so when we'll go in there and talk, there sometimes feels like there's a culture of, we don't want to ask a question because we don't want to be seen to not know the answer or put their head above the parapet. But what are your thoughts on that?
I think there's I would say in the sports area particularly, I think there is, there's a lot of information out there, and there's a lot of things that are like touted as being the next best thing or the next best treatment. And so I do think you, and working alongside Lee Herrington, I have to admit, he's been a really good mentor in navigating the elite sport area. and that's just one person, but there's lots in the UKSI network, about picking through, like, you know, the fundamental, what does this do to the body versus what does this bit of kit do, or what does this treatment do? I think if you don't have a fairly good understanding about that, it's either going to come apart because what you're trying to do is not going to work, or you've got to pull apart why it isn't working. And there might be a whole ream for that. But I do think then when you step into the space, it allows you to you're not going to make every clinical decision right, of course, not at all. But it does give you a bit of a better weighting to, like, be a bit more confident with your decision making. And I think it's about confidence of decision making, really, because you have to make a decision, don't you? You can be like, right, are we going to be able to rehabilitate this person over this amount of time? Or how good is my diagnostic test about telling me that this is the pathology that's going on, is generally the two things. So that's what you're striving for, really, is to be as good as you can at those two things. And I'm not saying I'm good at those. I'm just saying that I'd like push myself to, like, try and do them the best I can.
Yeah, well, I think the UKSI seems, or, you know, formerly EIS, seems to have that mindset where you've got very high level practitioners, and there does seem to be a real level of both on the academic side of things, but then the practical implementation of it from the practitioners. I've always been very impressed with the people, pretty much everyone I've worked with in that space. How would you say that environment does compare with other ones?
I think, like, so I remember going across to, like, we were doing a training course in UKSI, and I realised actually in the room, blimey, there's some really, really good practitioners here. So I think for me, that was when I first started working in here about 2 years ago, and I'd always wanted to work in what was the EIS. I realised the step up, really. So I realised these clinicians, they know their subjects. Like, they are in this environment because they really know their background area, they really know their sport, and they really, really know their stuff. So that does push you higher. And then the technical leads obviously give that amazing technical support on top of that, to be like, the problems are going, especially at this time point in the cycle, you know, everything's getting a bit twitchy because we've got these big events that are coming up, and people have got to either make that time point or they're not. And so actually there is this kind of push to, like, sort of push your kind of sort of level. But I mean, we're really well supported in the UKSI from a CPD point of view with the ESPA program. So the way that runs, it used to be a formal master's, but now it's not. It's weekend courses. But that works fine because most people that will come into this environment will have a master's anyway. So actually it's about practitioners coming together, sharing ideas, pushing thinking, and understanding, like, different sports and approaching different sports. And then actually the clever bit about that teaching is the fact that actually there's no real assessment. It's more about you doing a post-course task in order to, like, push your own learning. So you're actually, like, picking out what you want to learn. And that's actually an incredibly powerful way to learn, because you'll know yourself, you'll always learn something you want to learn. But actually to be pushed into something, if it's not really quite what you really want to do, unless it's a tick box exercise to get to the next thing, it's sometimes quite hard to, like, get yourself into that depth, that learning sort of space. So I think that's what I've seen from the kind of practitioners in this environment. And it is different in other ones, but then I work in another university-based clinic, so it will be the same type of thing. And I have worked in other private practices and stuff like that. And the motivation for the actual service is different. Same thing for the motivation for, like, a NHS clinic. It can be slightly different. So the motivation, the focus for the team may be quite different. It's very obvious here, like, we are helping somebody to go to an event. That is usually kind of what we're here for.
Yeah. So then once you've done that master's degree, like, what was the next step after that?
So I kind of finished that, and then I'd met my now wife, and she was like, well, it's nice to meet you in London, but I'm going back to the north. I was like, oh, right, okay. So I've got a decision here. I'm either moving north or I'm staying sort of here, really. You know, she was very nice as well. So, you know, that was a big pull, obviously. So, that was a big crossroads. I kind of was like, right, I think I could have maybe stepped into, like, a sports full-time role then, but I was actually in a space where I was a bit older, and I was thinking, I want to get some life things moving forward. So, and I was really lucky with meeting Anna. So we decided to, like, move up to Manchester. And I thought, like I said at the start, I thought some sports stuff would come up in this area. I didn't know when it would come up, but we moved up together. I kind of sort of floated around between like finding some work around here, and then I managed to get some work in a private clinic, and I ended up working at Keele University like one day a week. I was kind of hired as a, I was emailed around lots of places, and they said, look, we've got some teaching that's coming up, so if you want to come and do like some teaching on a Tuesday for us. And I started doing that, and then the new head of department there was like, oh, I see you've set up a physio clinic at another university, do you fancy doing it here? And I was like, yeah, right. So they paid me for another day, and they were like, oh, well, can you set this clinic up? And I was like, well, yeah, but you might have to give me a job at the end of it. So that kind of sort of snowballed. And again, the same sort of thing is what happened at Solent. This job kind of sort of got kind of created that was a part-time clinical lead and part-time teaching fellow, which is like not a full lecturer. It's a one down from a lecturer, but the main difference with the job description is you're not doing research. That's the main difference. So I was kind of salaried. I was able to like do a couple of days in the clinic, a couple of days learning my kind of skills of teaching, and sort of start working in academia. So started working at Keele in full time, I think 2017, and did that through until about, well, till lockdown. So literally like 2020.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. So we must have, that must have been just before all that then when we met.
Yes, we'd have met about I moved up to Manchester in 2016. Right. So so we went down to that tennis club, didn't we?
Well, like, yeah, that was where our clinic was based. We're still there, and it's like, I remember sat outside talking it through. Yeah. I remember thinking like you were talking about a lot about this stuff, and I remember the conversation of getting involved in research and working with things, and it's like sounded really, really good. We didn't have like that real capability at that point to do it, and so, you know, it's great to see like what you've gone on to do now then. So you'd gone on to do that in 2020, and then like at what point did UKSI come along?
So basically working at Keele, I had a great time working at Keele. I kind of started to like, I was able to basically learn how to be a lecturer, and it's tough academia. Like it's tough because the workload's high, and the volume of the expectation of what you're expected to do for not just the course, but as a staff group is really challenging. So hats off to anyone working in academia, it is tough. And I just had my son in 2019. So Sammy, he changed my world for a lot of different reasons, but mainly for the sleep, but also for the fact that I realized I can't commute down to Keele 5 days a week. Like it might be an hour. I was going on the bike and cycling on my little Brompton up a hill, and it was like, this is crazy. So I was really lucky. I've put the feelers out to Man Met to see if there's any posts coming up, and very kindly like a couple of people got back in contact and says yes, there's some posts coming up, and the department lead there, Julie, she was like, yeah, we're gonna have some posts coming up, you're welcome to interview. And so because I got the Man Met post, I started working there in 2020. I literally started in lockdown, so you couldn't go in. And then there was a sort of weird year where we were sort of back in, but I didn't really get to know anyone. And then we'd had the next Olympics by then, because it was delayed in 2021. And then the funding was all released. And there was a big movement in UKSI, obviously, after the Olympics, because people will move around different posts. So some multi-sport hours came up. And because I had my son, I kind of thought, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to and we'd had our daughter as well by then, I'm not quite sure if I'm going to be able to step into league sport, because I just can't commit the time at weekends and stuff like that. And then this post came out, and I was like, called Lee, and I was like, oh, so what's the times? And he was like, oh, Monday, Tuesday. I'm like, all right. And then what's it like around like evenings, weekends? Well, yeah, there's this, that, and the other, it should be. And I was like, oh, but this is an option. I did the interview, and it was I thought a real grilling from Lee, but he said it was nothing compared to what he's given to other people. But very kindly I was offered this sort of position, and started that then in base 2022. So I've been in this role for almost a couple of years, and it's been a real learning curve, but it's always a space I wanted to work. And it's a fantastic, I think it's a fantastic company to work for. And I love the work of multi-sport, because it allows me basically to do what I'm good at, which is communicate with lots of different people, have different people coming in, but have to like make communications with people in other NGBs, other teams, get to the bottom of like what's going on quick, rehab, et cetera, et cetera. So it really kind of sort of, I think, plays to my strengths really in terms of that kind of sort of like role really.
Yeah, who else is on the interview panel?
So the netball physio, footing netball, Snowy. So she was in there. So she was very nice. Lee though. No. So it was a really good interview, and it was good because actually like you're being pushed, and this is where the MACP stuff and working alongside lots of good clinicians really comes in. Because that's when you're being tested, really, is when you're kind of put under pressure of those kind of situations. I mean, that's just an interview. But then when you're being put under pressure to make a decision about somebody when you've got a time frame that might finish, that's when you've got to have confidence in what you think at that time point.
Yeah. And so what do you foresee being the projects that you're going to be working on going forward?
The big thing at the moment is obviously we're gearing up towards Paris Olympics and Paralympics. So a lot of sports are either trying to like qualify or individuals are trying to qualify. So in the area with the teams that are around in the area, we're here to support any overflow that the physios working with those sports have. So we've got cycling, squash, para swim as our kind of sort of main ones. Netball have got their season underway now. So so those would be the kind of bigger sports. And we've got gymnastics that will have regionally people in the area. Snow sports, obviously not as priority just at the moment for them because they're kind of sort of finishing off their season. So those be our big sports in the run up to June, July, who at the drop of the hat will suddenly come in. So we just need to be available to pick that up as a team and make sure we can either diagnose or work out what's going on for them.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Like you obviously got a lot going on, family and then work with the various roles. But how do you, for one, I'll switch off. I'll start with that one first. How do you switch off?
Go to Korea for 3 weeks and go and not have somebody saying, daddy, can I have this? No, I didn't switch off from Korea. It was a very different way of thinking, but it was, it's busy. It is really busy. I think the real pro of having, if having a family is lovely, it's busy because you're picking it up with them. But when you're at home, you're at home. So, I try and make it that I'm not answering emails. I'm not on my phone, like in front of them. I'm not doing stuff at weekends that is usually impacting on that time frame. And often we're juggling the work between us. So so my wife would work and so I've got the kids. So so I get like maximized time with them. So that really is the kind of time where I'm outside of work. And actually, I know mentally after a weekend, that's a really good space to have. It is difficult, like downtime wise, like you've got to be pretty clever. So I enjoy sports stuff. I don't play a sport at level anymore, but I still exercise a lot. So that is my space to like unplug and basically like not think about all those things and just do my own thing. And then just good with my time really. Just make sure you're switching off when you get the chance after the kids have gone to bed.
Yeah, get a good box set on. Yeah. And then I'm massively into personal professional development. Are there any particular books that you read, podcasts, things that you'd recommend?
Yes, I know. Now I knew you were going to ask this, and I was like, I better think of a really good one. And do you know what? I used to read loads. Like I used to just burn through them. And I think the kids have put that to bed really. But so I have to admit, podcast wise, I really listen to your stuff because I like hearing what other practitioners are up to. I find that's really interesting. High performance podcast wise, getting that on the phone, I think that's some interesting stuff through there. And generally, if I hear somebody of interest, I'll kind of Google them, see if there's a podcast about them, listen a little bit more what they've kind of done. I am interested in some of the like, leadership books. I do love autobiographies. Like I'd say, if I'm going to read some, I'll read those. But if I'm going to kind of just a period in life where I'm just needing to like downtime, then I'll just pick up like a fiction murder mystery book, something like that. That'll be my thing. So I'm reading a book on like basically space at the moment. It's British astronaut Tim. He's kind of got this book out about space and all that stuff, and I just find that fascinating. I just think it's crazy how we put people up there, and we're about to kind of do it again. So and us actually, he comes from, his autobiography is kind of from a very similar kind of background where you're like in the middle of near Chichester, and didn't think he was really going to go to that level. So it's like, oh, how's somebody gone from that space to like being really successful? So I think that's the bit I find quite interesting.
Doesn't sound like a switch off book, reading a book about like space.
But it's just, yeah, it's just interesting. It's just like so different.
I think like with that, the personal and professional development, and I was processing this, like for me, I love doing it, but there's so much stuff out there now that you can consume, whether it's books, abbreviated books, podcasts, and then you've got like the stuff to switch off to. And it's quite challenging to actually think, actually, what do you invest your time into? Because there's so much option. And then actually doing your day job, and then you're trying to switch off on things. So it is quite challenging to pick things that you think are, well, you want to spend your time on.
I think the best, for me now, the best way to do it is to basically to meet up with people and chat about things in a kind of work environment. Or if you've got connections in the local area and you want to connect with someone, like have a coffee. And that's the best way, I think, information like comes across. Like, oh, I've had this real problem with so-and-so or this, or what do you think to that? Oh, yeah, no, I do that. All right, that's interesting. And I think actually that's probably more the area now where I can gain a lot of my personal development. Or if like, so we haven't talked about career necessarily, but I've done a bit of a debrief around that, like, and with some different practitioners, because I'm like, oh, okay, I just want to chat this through. And that's actually been the personal development bit. It's like, oh yeah, no, that was a really good bit of learning for me, that type of thing.
You know, I think, yeah, when you reflect on yourself, you actually think, actually, I've got so much experience, or I have done that. And sometimes you just think, yeah, no, I don't know anything about that. When in reality, what you've done will be massively helpful if you can summarize some of that stuff for future people.
Yeah, definitely.
And so, yeah, on that note then, so what would your advice be to people, you know, in wanting to get into this area?
I think, like, it's a long game. Like, you don't have to necessarily do it now. Like, I've taken a lot longer to get to maybe some of the areas where I wanted to go, but like that's fine. Like, you don't have to suddenly get to Olympics in like 5 years. For me, I think I feel in a better space because like, I've had more time to like consolidate, see things, that type of stuff. So I think that would be the big first thing. I think putting yourself out there and not being scared to fail is a classic one, but yeah, not knowing your limits, but going into an area where you go down to a local club, or as long as you've got a support network there for you if something goes wrong. I've got nothing against somebody like trying at like starting with a football team or a rugby team, and then but have like a mentor who's on phone, who like if something goes wrong, that you've got somebody you could just ask like questions to. So I think that's a good thing to do, you know, once you've got your professional qualification, as long as you're safe. I don't see anything to that. And then I think like you know you've got to connect with people and like have a chat to them and see what they've done and those types of things, and not be too pushy, but just ask them, you know, be a sort of bit of a sponge to knowledge, and what, you know, ask them what they can tell you about things. You're never going to know it all, so just ask everyone's advice and stuff and see what they think, and then you take the bits you like, and if not, then you make your own decision on it.
No, I agree with all of those things. I think it's always good to just be curious and asking questions of people, and it's up to you whether or not it fits with the way that you want to do things. But no, Ben, look, appreciate it. Thank you for coming back on again for this. And we'll sit down and we'll have that coffee soon and talk through some of our other life experiences and things. But no, I really appreciate your time today.
Nice one. Well, thanks very much for your time. It's a pleasure to do it. And I look forward to hearing some of the other episodes in the future.
Cheers, Ben. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Nice one. See you later on.